Today at Reader's Corner, an interview from our archives with former Idaho Governor and Secretary of the Interior, Cecil Andrus. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. Today we're featuring a special edition of our show as we remember and honor the remarkable life and legacy of Cecil D. Andrus, who died last week, just one day before his 86th birthday. Governor Andrus was the only Idahoan elected four times as the state's governor, and he also served as Secretary of the Interior under President Jimmy Carter. He was a lifelong Democrat, but he knew how to work with colleagues of various persuasions to address issues that truly mattered to Idahoans and to the nation. In November of 2004, I had the privilege of interviewing Cecil Andrus on this program, and today we're airing an encore edition of that interview. But first, I've invited John Freemuth, Executive Director of the Andrus Center for Public Policy at Boise State University, to join me in the studio. Dr. Freemuth is a professor of public policy, and he's been a guest on our program in the past to discuss his book, Islands Under Siege, National Parks, and the Politics of External Threats. John and Governor Andrus worked together for many years, and I thought it would only be appropriate to have John on to reflect on the death of Cecil Andrus, the great legacy he leaves behind him. And John, maybe we could start by having you talk about that legacy. His legacy, among other things, will be preservation and conservation.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, as governor, we know some of the things he did, but as Secretary of the Interior and governor, he's had a remarkable impact on the landscape, especially the Western landscape. Give us some idea of what that means.
Well, when he was Secretary of Interior, he had a lot of things he had to do. Probably the one that most environmentalists celebrate and others is how they use the Antiquities Act in Alaska, he and President Carter, to get stuff done, to force Congress to pass the bill, which is classic Andrus style. You'd appreciate it, Bob. You were in politics. He cares about the public good, but he uses power effectively to get there. And it brought Mike Gravel, who you remember was filibustering the bill. Andrus talked to Carter and said, let's use the Antiquities Act and we'll get him back. He literally, Carter looks at him and says, I can do that? Well, yes, sir, you can. Well, let's do it. And they used it. They got the bill done, and then they withdrew all the proclamations because they got most of what they wanted. Ronald Reagan had been elected, so they knew they wouldn't get everything, but they got it done. And it doubled the size, for example, of the park system. So and that's a legacy.
So since then, the Antiquities Act has been used as a bit of a threat over the head of Congress to take action.
It has.
Is that where – did it start there with Cecil, do you think?
I think it did in a way. The other things before were just done sometimes because Congress wasn't acting. Even Teddy Roosevelt with Grand Canyon did it that way. But Andrus came back and did it again on the Boulder White Clouds. Mike Simpson was doing everything he could, but Cease got up before Wild Idaho, Idaho Conservation League's a big wilderness conference, said, well, why don't we just use the Antiquities Act? And that started a big movement to do that. Mike Simpson went in and asked for a little more time from the president. President Obama gave it to him, and they got it done. But it was Andrus's threat that got action again.
And we just had a conference last year where Governor Andrus and Congressman Simpson were on the same panel, and they talked about that experience.
They did. That was on campus. We were pleased to do it. But what people should remember about that is that's how, as you know, we used to do our politics. We got stuff done in a bipartisan way. I mean, you were at the memorial. Congressman Simpson was there. That kind of Governor Batt was there. That's a legacy.
And Governor Otter at the noon event actually talked about the fact that here he was, this Republican lieutenant governor who was considerably to the right of Cecil Andrus, the Democrat governor, even though Cecil was a moderate Democrat. But Governor Andrus and Governor and Lieutenant Governor Otter at the time found ways to work together.
Oh, they did. And they were very good friends. I'd sat at more lunch with them at Andrus events or whatever and could just see the teasing of each other. And they got along, you know, and that's what we needed, even when they disagreed.
So what was the political climate like in the days when Governor Andrus was getting these things done, either in Idaho or nationally when he was Secretary of the Interior, compared to the
climate today, this very bitter climate we have. I mean, you mentioned Senator Gravel. I think he was the senator from Alaska at the time. I mean, obviously, Governor Andrus didn't have a cakewalk in getting some of these things done. He still faced significant opposition. Maybe it wasn't as bitter sometimes as it is today, but he had to overcome some pretty significant hurdles.
Well, you know, I think he did. He always had a legislature that was Republican, except that one time when the Senate was split. Mm-hmm. For a while here in Idaho. And so he had to cajole and figure out ways to work across the aisle with a legislature that was conservative, but let's face it, not like some of the characters we see there now.
Right.
And you know, we've done this to ourselves nationally with gerrymandering the districts, the money in politics, and people don't have the incentive to get along like they used to.
Mm-hmm. I heard a great story the other day, and I don't even remember who told it, but it's about Governor Andrus coming back to run the second time, and some Republican legislators put an ad out in the newspaper as to why that shouldn't happen. And that ad was carefully clipped out of the Statesman, inserted in Governor Andrus's desk, and during that first session, when those legislators would come in asking for the governor's support, he'd pull that piece of paper out and take a look. I think Bruce Newcomb may have told me this story,
I'm sure
the
Bruce
former Speaker of the House, and he was a great admirer.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce is a great admirer of Governor Andrus, and he said he'd look that over and he'd remind those senators that this isn't going to be easy considering what you did
did
or against me.
He used to tell me once, you forgive, but you don't forgive. Forget. He was classic on that.
Well, he was also a guy, as we heard many times in the family memorial and the public memorial at noon at the Capitol, who could disagree but not be disagreeable.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your experience in that regard.
There's a story he told me that maybe illustrates it. I went into his office. Now, he was not in office anymore. We were running the Andrus Center. And he said, guess what I'm doing? He had his checkbook out. So, well, I don't know. Governor, what are you doing? And he was writing a check, a $100 check for the reelection campaign of Ted Stevens, the legendary conservative Republican from Alaska, who he worked with on the Alaska Lands Bill. And he said, once again, he kept his word. And this is my acknowledging that when we had to do that, we disagreed a lot, but he kept his word. So that's the you don't forgive, you remember the people you worked with successfully across the aisle.
Mm-hmm. So in recent years, there's been this push by some to take federal lands away from the federal government, return them to the states, or return large segments of land to the private sector. Help us understand how Cecil regarded that. What did Governor Andrus think of that effort, and how did he respond? In part, that's all rolled up into the creation of the Andrus Center for Public Policy and the work that it did.
Well, and he, of course, when he was secretary, he had to implement a new law, FLIPMA, that more or less said the BLM lands. And, Bob, I have a funny story there. During the Malheur dust-up over in eastern Oregon, I literally got a call from the national media in the east asking me why the ranchers were so mad at Black Lives Matter. And I paused, and I'm on the radio going, you mean BLM, right? Yeah. That stands for the Bureau of Land Management. Who are they?
Right.
He thought it was a ridiculous idea and did everything he could to point out that you can have resource use and extraction, but these lands are our kids' legacy, and we're holding it for them. So we did everything we could to point out that that's silly, though you said something that it's important, too. The states never had them. So when people say return them to the states, they're just being wrong historically and factually. But he was opposed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a good thing he was. And, of course, the Andrus Center for Public Policy, I think it's fair to say, is really dedicated to the preservation and conservation of the national landscape, no matter where it is.
Preservation, but problem solving, too. Mm-hmm. Bringing people like Mike Simpson, Governor Bullock of Montana, who I think is going to run for president, and maybe we need a Western Earth, one of these parties, to do it
exactly,
again.
Right.
But, yeah, to try to solve problems at the end of the day. And sometimes things the big national fire policy that came out of the last decade or two started at an Andrus conference when people got in the room and started talking. Now, we're not going to claim we did it. We got them in the room.
Mm-hmm. Well, we here at Boise State are going to make sure, as I told Mrs. Andrus after the funeral memorial, that we're going to continue his legacy here. We're going to protect it and preserve it and make sure that it remains the kind of leader that it's been in preservation and conservation. And John Freemuth, I'd like to thank you for the role you've played over the years in keeping this issue alive, working with Governor Andrus, being his good friend and the scholar he leaned on so often as he worked his way through these many issues. Thanks for being with us today at Reader's Corner.
You bet.
And now we'll play the interview I conducted with Cecil Andrus back in 2004. Our conversation took place shortly before Governor Andrus received an honorary doctorate from Boise State and shortly after the 2004 presidential election when George W. Bush was reelected to a second term. We discussed that election briefly and then moved on to a range of other topics. I began the interview, as always, by welcoming my guest. Governor, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Now, you and I have this understanding. I tried to get by with calling you governor, and you said, no, if you were going to do that, you were going to call me Mr. President. You just did.
I did, but you referred to governor. All right.
That's right.
All right, Bob.
It's Cease and Bob, the Cease and Bob show. How's that?
The Cease and Bob show.
That sounds great. Well, again, as I told you before the show, I had planned this show months ago when I really wanted to focus, and we will do that, on your career and especially the work you did as Secretary of the Interior, the work you did as governor. But before we go there, since this is still fresh in our minds, we've had this national election. The country reelected George Bush. The Democrats put up John Kerry. It was a close race. Now, of course, there's all this Monday morning armchair quarterbacking. And I wonder if we couldn't start there and get your thoughts. You are indeed the titular head of the Democratic Party in the state of Idaho. You're nationally known around the country for your leadership in the party. Let's talk, first of all, I'm just curious, did anything happen Tuesday night that you didn't think would happen, number one? And then number two, what's the future hold for the Democratic Party? But let's start with that first one. How did Tuesday night turn out for you?
Well, it was a sad night for me because,
of course,
obviously I was opposed to the reelection of President Bush. But I've been through a lot of elections in my 40 years in politics, and once they're over with, I try to put them behind me and do the best we can with the results. But now, as we look at it, what we're faced with is the presidency is held by a Republican. Both houses of Congress are held majority party by the Republicans, and I don't like that in either party. I prefer to see some checks and balances, whether it be in the state legislature or whether it be in the federal government, to where Congress, one party might control Congress and another party control the White House. Now they will have the bit in their teeth, and they will do basically whatever they please. And that's really not the way, in my opinion, for good, stable government to be held.
Whether it's the campaign process or the governmental process once you get elected, and the legislative process in particular, many people point to a stark contrast to the way people either in the campaign cycle or in the government cycle behave these days compared to the days of yesteryear. Let's go back to the 1980s, to the 70s, when you were in office, when you were either in the Idaho State Senate or when you were in Washington. I'm curious whether you've noticed that. Is this just some exaggeration? We all think we live in an era that's worse than the one that came before us, or can you see a noticeable difference in the mean and divisive nature of either campaigning or going to the legislative process, the point you were talking about earlier about you and Phil Batt getting along, being in different parties and yet being buddies and able to sit down at the end of a legislative session and work out differences of opinion. Is that happening in the U.S. Senate and the Congress the way it once did when there was, some say, a more civil environment?
No, and that's too bad. I believe that it doesn't really make that much difference as to where they have served, as what they stand for. You take a New England Democrat, you'll find the Ted Kennedys of the world are much more liberal than myself, for example. I'm a conservative Democrat, come out of the Harry Truman mold. But there are Republicans in other part of the country that are much more liberal than I am or others. Keep in mind, as you pointed out in your early remarks, I was elected governor four times in this state. I'm a Democrat. That was not a situation where my party affiliation at the national level was a problem. The people knew me. They trusted me. I didn't lie to them. I was honest. I was fiscally responsible. And that's basically what they ask. But the bitterness and the rancor and the partisan meanness that we see today, I saw it start in 1980 in the Frank Church election with Steve Sims and the Ronald Reagan's move into the White House. I saw those things start then, and they have compounded to where today a Republican doesn't dare step over the line to help a Democratic proposal, or vice versa. The Democrat doesn't dare step over, or somebody hands them their head. Mm-hmm. And they will make any kind of a derogatory comment that they choose to in an election year, and then apologize later. Well, I don't go much for public abuse and private apologies.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've probably figured it out by now, but you're listening to Governor Cecil Andrus. We're talking about politics and government. He's also, of course, the voice and face of Zamzows here in the Treasure Valley.
I'm a hunter and a fisherman. I have a great German Shorthair pointing dog, and when he was a pup, I had a little problem with his diet, and he wasn't gaining weight and everything. And a friend of mine, Jim Martin, who manages Zamzow's store on Fairview, said, "Well, what are you feeding him?" And I told him, and he said, "Well, the filler is corn, and we're going to put him on a rice and diet." And the dog immediately responded. And I told Jim, I said, "Man, if you ever need anybody to say that Zamzow's dog food right. is good stuff, I'll do it." But 2 days later, he came.
And you got a new career.
So, but no, that's behind me now. My dog's 5 years old.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And my dog is in good health, and we still use the Zamzow's dog food. And the fertilizer on the lawn, but no, I'm not their spokesperson anymore.
Well, speaking of what's behind you, one of the things that's behind you and what you're going to be remembered for a long, long, long time outside of Idaho is the years you spent serving President Carter as Secretary of the Interior. And I'd like you to comment on a couple of things. Your role in the creation of the National Park System, the expansion of the national park system in Alaska, and the disposal of nuclear waste. Those are two things that meant a great deal to you, yeah. And they really do form your legacy in that office.
Well, I would say that during my 4 years as Secretary of the Department of the Interior, we resolved a lot of problems: offshore oil leasing, strip mine regulations. But yes, the major piece of legislation that people point to and remember what happened on, quote, my watch, mm-hmm. and was my responsibility, was the Alaska Lands Bill, where we put protection on 103 million acres, but at the same time, people forget we opened up 254 million acres for other uses. But we more than doubled the national park acreage. We more than doubled the wildlife refuge acres. We increased the national forest boundaries, increased the area where minerals could be extracted. We did what was necessary to improve Point Thompson, Prudhoe Bay, and the other oil-producing areas up there. So, but at the same time, we had the opportunity to do it right the first time. And what I mean by that, Bob, is that too many times in the history of America, we started out to build a strong healthy nation without any regard for the environment in which we live. And then all of a sudden we realize, whoops, we've made some mistakes. So we start protecting little remnants of this or the last free-flowing river here or this. Right. In Alaska, the sheer mass of that area gave us the opportunity to do it right the first time. And we did it right. Mm-hmm. And the accolades continue to pour in. Now, there is one continuing controversy that is going to rear its head again after this election, and that is the production of oil and gas off the Arctic wildlife range. And we don't have time on this program to go into in depth, but I'm familiar with that area and the situation that it will take to resolve it, but it's a situation where it's unlike Prudhoe. Prudhoe, the horizons of oil are vertically, and on the range they're horizontally, and it's the last little piece of earth, a North American continent, that doesn't have the industrial footprint of man upon it. It's the area where the muskox still, the porcupine caribou herd, the things going on. There are other areas that we have more hydrocarbon potential than there, and it would be cheaper to get at. For example, the west coast of Florida and the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. Those are known resources, not questionable, known. Off Santa Barbara, California, another place. But people don't want those offshore oil platforms infringing upon their view. Mm-hmm. So
you think we ought to go slow on this business of the
Arctic? I do, too. If we need that hydrocarbon, let it be the last.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There are other areas up there. Point Thompson hasn't been developed. Yeah. Krupa Lake and some others that would go. Yeah. So that's it. Now, you mentioned the nuclear waste situation that we have here. Again, there's where Phil Batt and I worked together. I started fighting that battle in 1971 to get the waste out of Idaho. We continued to battle with the Department of Energy, and it goes on today. And then, as I left office, Phil came into the governorship. The two of us continued to work together to put together that agreement that he signed in 1995. And now they're trying to loosen up part of it to say that the heel can stay in those tanks of liquid over there, and they can grout it with cement. That's not part of the agreement. The agreement says all waste must be removed. The federal courts have upheld us in every position. But for the governor and for our congressional delegation to cave into that, that's still a poison that's beneath the surface of the earth above the largest freshwater aquifer in North America. Mm-hmm. And, Bob, you can't gamble with that. Mm-hmm. What would it do to the Idaho potatoes reputation, for example, if somebody said, whoops, we've contaminated the water to irrigate those potatoes. Yeah. But bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news. So, yes, I spent 30 years fighting that battle. I think we're winning it, but it's a slow process.
Mm-hmm. On a related issue, Congressman Simpson has proposed setting aside some land for wilderness purposes. I believe it's called the White Cloud.
The Boulder White Clouds.
The Boulder White Clouds.
Yes, sir.
What did you think of that proposal?
I think it's a move. I attempted that move with Senator McClure again. There was a Republican United States senator and a Democratic governor where we used to work together. The two of us created the Hills Canyon National Recreation Area without staff's help and the boundaries. The story is we got down on our hands and knees with the maps on the floor of the governor's office and drew the boundaries along the hydrological divide. And did that. We tried to complete the Wilderness Act and present it to Congress, and we both got our heads kicked in by his friends and my friends saying that, one side gave up too much. Congressman Simpson's on the right track. I think that the Boulder White Clouds is a sensitive area, that part of it should be wilderness. There are areas where the snow machines and motorized off all-terrain vehicles can go. But there are some areas that ought to be left just the way God created them. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. You can't they misuse that, like we talked about liberal and conservative titles
right,
a while ago.
Right.
They say, well, that all this land can multiple use, and they use that term to imply that everybody then can use the same piece of property. Have you seen very many picnics being held in an open pit mine?
Yeah,
do you see deer and elk grazing? No. So you've got to kind of, if you're going to develop this part for mining and timber or whatever, then something over here has to be protected
right.
for the other things.
Mm-hmm.
Because watershed, for example, you can't strip the land and expect to have watershed that will provide water for irrigation, culinary purposes, and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I support the congressman's efforts to create the Boulder White Clouds.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Reader's Corner, and today we're featuring an interview from our archives with former Idaho Governor and Secretary of the Interior, Cecil Andrus.
In 1979, President Carter asked for your resignation, as he did the entire cabinet. And I have to admit that this has faded so far back in my memory that I really didn't even think about it until it was called to my attention in some work on getting this program ready. What happened there?
Well, let me correct one thing. It was 1980.
It
was during after the November election in 80, and it wasn't the president. It was the White House personnel department said that all cabinet secretaries and everybody will turn in their resignation.
In preparation for the new president.
And you're to give them a letter of resignation. Well, I was the only cabinet member that said, go to blazes. We lost an election. That will end when the new president takes the oath of office, and I'll exit the office and they can have it. But there's no way I'm going to resign unless the president calls me and says, hey, Cease, I want your resignation. Then, of course, he'll get it. He never called. And as it turned out, that very act made it successful for the Northern California Wild and Scenic Rivers to be an act to be upheld by law, because I designated those rivers. It was appealed by a group of industrialists and others that said that they didn't want the Wild and Scenic Rivers in Northern California, which were part of the Klamath and the Eel and the Smith and the Trinity and the others. They wanted to export that water south into Southern California. Well, it was deemed to be the big issue in California at that point in time, and I had declared them as wild and scenic under the act. Then they filed suit, and the Ninth Circuit at 4:30 on the 19th day of January of 81 found in our favor. All right. Then we went ahead and signed the documents that protected the rivers. Then they filed suit again and said, well, you were no longer Secretary of the Interior because 4:30 in California was 7:30 in Washington, D.C., and therefore you were no longer Secretary of the Interior. I had never turned in a resignation. Therefore, I was still Secretary, and the court upheld it on that basis. There's more to the story, but we don't have time to go into it.
Saved by the stand that Cecil Andrus took in 1980. That's great.
And I still get letters from people, particularly fly fishermen. And
I was going to say, yeah.
They say, hey, thank you. I just had a great day fishing up on the Trinity. And
right.
had it not been for the fact that I would not resign, the court would have obviously held that I was not Secretary of the Interior.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those footnotes to American history that has to be told over and over again every now and then. Governor, we've run out of time. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Bob, for having me here. I enjoy my association with Boise State University. My papers are here in the library, and the center, as you point out, is on BSU's property.
Right. Well, we're delighted that is the case, and we're delighted to have you on our campus. campus as well. Thank you very much for your service.
I thank you, sir, for the honorary doctorate coming up.
Well, the faculty really, I sat in on the committee on that one, and I listened to the faculty talk about you, and it was a very stirring moment for me to hear the sincere appreciation this faculty feels for what you have done for this country and what you've done for the state of Idaho and what you've done for Idaho higher education.
Well, higher education has taken it in the neck these last 8 or 9 years, and the Idaho legislature is not stepping up to the bar and doing what they should do or fulfilling their responsibility.
Wow, am I glad you got that in, Governor. That's an important... If you didn't say it, I probably would have, but no, I get into too much trouble when I say things like that.
You can't say it.
That's right. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this interview from our archives with Governor Cecil Andrus. Next week, Glenn Frankel, author of High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of an American Classic. Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio. The engineers for today's show are Samantha Wright and Andrew Fisher. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.